BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk, another critical issue as we discuss here on this program to make you aware of what's taking place across this nation. And today our center of attention is going to be on the state of Texas. What would you do, ladies and gentlemen, if your spouse or perhaps your son or daughter or loved one was rushed to the hospital? Perhaps it was due to a vehicle accident, a stroke, maybe it was something, they just collapsed, something totally unknown. As to what brought about some physical demise. And maybe their care required being put on a ventilator at the hospital in the emergency room. Maybe not necessary oxygen or some other tube or piece of medical equipment as they struggle for life or just to assist in recovering from whatever the medical issue is. Suppose in that struggle your hospital came out and said, we've had a meeting and in 10 days we're pulling the plug. No matter if you as a parent or a spouse object, the hospital, with authority of Texas law, gives you, your loved one, a death sentence with a 10-day notice. That's what's happening in Texas today. And there's an issue, a life, that is at stake. Joining us today, we welcome John Segoe. John is the legislative director for Texas Right to Life. John, thanks for joining us on Crosstalk today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
John, there is a provision of the Texas Advanced Directives Act. It's known as the 10-day rule. Explain for us, what is this? What is this Advanced Directives Act? What is this 10-day rule?
Yeah. Thanks for having me again. The Texas kind of considers itself, we consider ourselves as one of the leaders in the pro-life movement, but we have this law on our books that is a kind of dirty little secret about somewhere in our law where we do not protect life, where we do not protect the most vulnerable, innocent humans among us. And it's a black mark on our record because we have this unique law that was passed in 1999 that was, the goal was to give physicians and hospitals a step-by-step process of what to do whenever there's a disagreement between a physician and a patient or a physician and a family concerning life-sustaining treatment, concerning food and water, a ventilator, dialysis, something, a basic life-sustaining treatment, not surgeries or chemo or big medical interventions, but just when it comes to basic life-sustaining treatment, what do you do when there's a disagreement? And this law kind of laid out this process of, it doesn't matter why there's a disagreement or who's on what side, this is the process you follow. Unfortunately, at the end of that process, there is this mechanism where the physician and the hospital automatically get to win the argument. They get the upper hand, and this it's slanted towards what they believe. So if the physician wants to withdraw a ventilator and the family is requesting it stay on, the physician goes through this process, and at the end of the process, he says, okay, in 10 days, we're going to take the ventilator away. And as long as the physician follows that legal process, he has complete immunity. He's completely protected from any lawsuits, losing his license, being drug in court. He's completely protected to withdraw a ventilator from that vulnerable patient, which would hasten their death.
Now, does this also include a feeding tube?
So originally in 1999, when the law was passed, it did include artificial nutrition and hydration, food and water. Thankfully, in 2015, we were able to take that or put in some patient protections on food and water. So the majority of the cases we see today are around a ventilator, the assistance, medical assistance breathing, mechanical assistant breathing, that a physician, that a patient can't breathe on their own, but still, it's a life-sustaining treatment, and once that ventilator is forcibly withdrawn from a patient, that does hasten their death.
Now, earlier you also mentioned dialysis. Does that apply to that, or has that been excluded as well?
Dialysis still applies. We have a patient right now who is on both a ventilator and dialysis, and that can unilaterally be withdrawn from the physician if they use the current Texas law that we're talking about.
Okay. Now, the patient can be conscious through all of this?
Absolutely. There's no medical criteria. There's no limitations on who this process can be used against. It has nothing to do with finances, with your insurance coverage, with where you live in the state, with, you know, or your medical condition. So this is not just limited to patients who are unconscious or patients who have been in the hospital for a long time. We've actually seen this process started on a patient who has been in the hospital less than 3 days. And so this is, there's no criteria, because the idea was we want a process for the physicians to follow. And as long as they dot all their I's, across all their T's, they have the immunity to withdraw the life-sustaining treatment.
Okay, so the bottom line really to this, John, is this is really involuntary euthanasia, isn't it?
Yes. So there's two kinds of euthanasia. People don't like that word. They think it's sensationalizing the issue, but there's, you know, when you look at the literature, when you look at medical ethics, there's passive euthanasia and active euthanasia. This is definitely passive euthanasia, withdrawing basic life-sustaining treatment against the will of the patient and hastening their death. And this is, again, this is not chemo. This is not surgery. These are not big, heroic medical interventions. This is ordinary care, food, water, air, dialysis. I mean, these are basic life-sustaining therapies.
Well, John, we're going to kind of look back in history a little bit to this, and I know you've got some of these stories documented on your website as to how this 10-day rule is being applied. So we'll talk about a couple things that have happened in the past and then look at current. But tell us the story of David Christopher Dunn. Who was this man?
Yeah. Chris Dunn was he was an American hero, really. I mean, he is a guy with a great past, serving his community in several different capacities. And he is not somebody you would expect to be victimized by this law, because he was a healthy individual. He, had some public service in his background and, you know, had some security jobs. But, you know, there came some circumstances. He was in the hospital multiple times for, different illnesses. And it kind of just, his health just kind of went down. And at some point, at one hospital, the hospital administration kind of devalued his life, looked at him and said, you know, even if he recovers from this kidney condition, he will not have, his quality of life will be so low that it's not worth living. And that's one of the things we see a lot in these cases, is there's an ethical judgment. This is not just them looking at the medical outlook of what interventions can we do to save Chris. There was an ethical judgment made by the hospital saying his quality of life is so low, even if he survives, it would not be a life worth living. And they made that ethical judgment and then started the 10-day process. Now,
yeah, Chris was fully conscious. He was responsive, that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So Chris was one of the cases where he was conscious. He had, his mother was there advocating on his behalf, but he was also alert and awake, and we have a video on our website, TexasRightToLife.com, if you just look up Chris Dunn, where, you know, we were, the attorneys were asking him, you know, Chris, do you want to live? Do you want to continue the ventilator? And, you know, he responds, putting his hands together. It's like he's pleading, please, you know, keep my treatment on. And it's phenomenal that you would have a patient who's responding. Now, he has a tube, so he's not speaking to you, but he's responding with his actions. We've had patients even be able to write out, instructions, this process still allows for a physician to say, no, we disagree with the decision to continue treatment. We're going to go through with this process.
And Chris's mom was given notice of a meeting. What happened?
Yeah, so, Ellen was, she was there. I mean, she, you know, you can imagine families and a lot of nurse have been through this situation, been with a loved one in the hospital, and how taxing it is, how emotionally draining it is, just physically draining, just being there, not having a comfortable place to sleep while you're trying to care for your loved one. And on top of that, Evelyn was given this notice, is there's going to be a meeting in 2 days of the ethics committee, and we're going to discuss the treatment of Chris. And there had been disagreements with the physician before then, where Evelyn, Chris's mother, wanted to continue the treatment, wanted to continue the ventilator, do some more tests, figure out what this mass on his kidney was about. And, you know, and so what happened was then she gets this notice that there's going to be a meeting. She had been to lots of meetings, but this one seems different. She goes to this ethics committee, and there is, you know, representatives from all over the hospital there in this meeting, with, you know, some representing the medical side, some representing the legal, you know, the lawyers for the hospital, and some representing the administration of the hospital.
But only one, only one, though, that had treated Chris.
Correct, correct, yes. You know, the law doesn't require who sits on these ethics committees. That's another another criticism that has been aired, not just by us, but by experts, you know, bioethics experts that look at this law. It doesn't say who gets to sit on the committee that makes this decision. So anybody could be there. It could be, you know, and so there were, you know, the majority of the committee had never treated Chris. They had never talked to Evelyn. They had not had the discussions about, you know, weighing the outcomes and the possibilities for him. And ultimately, they did what we've seen dozens and dozens of times before, of this decision being handed off to Evelyn, saying, you have 10 days to transfer Chris to another facility, or we're going to withdraw treatment. And, you know, I don't know if your listeners have ever been in this situation, but as a citizen, just as a non-doctor, I do not have the capacity to transfer a loved one. If my wife is in the hospital and I want to get her to a different facility, I can't do that on my own. Mm-hmm. I have to ask my doctor to help me do that. And that's the situation Evelyn was in. And she said, well, what do? Do I just call random hospitals around the city to see if they'll take him? That's not how transfers happen. You have to have the medical, you know, professional contact the other accepting physician. So she was in a bind. Now, Text Right to Life got involved. My organization, we serve as patient advocates. So we get the call from these families. So we're a pro-life organization. We deal with protecting pregnant women and preborn children, but also vulnerable patients. And so we get involved as patient advocates in these cases. We went, helped out Evelyn, and not most of these cases don't want to go public, but Evelyn did, and she wanted to do anything she could to protect her son. And once this went public, some legal documents. We did file some lawsuits to get a temporary restraining order. After a little while, and there was enough pressure, they did stop the countdown. But only because of the media attention, mm-hmm. because of the legal pressure on the hospital. And thankfully, we were looking for a transfer for Chris, and he did pass away naturally. But it was close to. The end of the year, and it was a very long time after they would have withdrawn his treatment following that 10-day process. They were not giving him, he would have been withdrawn if there wasn't that media attention to put that hold on the countdown.
We're going to be taking a break, folks. We're talking with John Segoe today. He is a legislative director for Texas Right to Life, and reviewing this 10-day rule. I mean, we've got lives that are hanging in the balance. We're going to tell you the story also of one other individual who was a victim of this 10-day rule. His name was Clifton. And then we're going to tell you about a current situation going on right now as we speak in a Texas hospital. Back in just 60 seconds, you're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, what's involved in being created in the image of God?
Chris, being in the image of God is more than just being a two-legged, two-armed creature. There is some sense in which God uses a human form to express his own nature, like the arm of the Lord, but God does not have a physical body. I suspect that the image of God deals with our spiritual nature, our appreciation for beauty and ability to love, and our ability to love and reject God, and of course, our eternal soul. A recent research project identified perhaps another aspect. It was shown that those people who love others and provide emotional support for others live longer themselves. These are godly qualities, and maybe that's part of being the image of God. If we live like that, it's beneficial. You see, Chris, even the way we act, it all goes back to Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris. For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're talking today with John Segoe. John is a legislative director for Texas Right to Life. And we're talking about the 10-day rule that's going on in Texas. It has been for a number of years, enabling that hospital just to make a declaration saying, hey, you're on a ventilator. 10 days from now, we're going to pull that. And unless you can successfully have your loved one conveyed to another hospital, sorry, that's it. And here we just heard the story of Christopher Dunn. Matter of fact, we understand we're not going to go further into that story, but that the hospital even attempted to seize guardianship of Christopher in that whole process. John, I'd like to also introduce our listeners to the story of a young 4-year-old boy named Clifton. Tell us about him.
Yeah, this is another personal story that we had tell at our Senate committee hearing. So we had a committee hearing on a bill that we're trying to pass to fix this 10-day rule. And this was another story that we've heard of this law kind of abusing vulnerable patients. And Clifton was a 4-year-old in Texas who suffered a traumatic brain injury back in 2012. And he ended up at a children's hospital in Houston. And he was on a ventilator, he had a feeding tube, he had some other interventions. And the hospital, very early on in his admission, the hospital had decided that he was, you know, that they didn't think he was worth the effort to fight for. And they turned their energy from trying to recover, help Clifton, wean off the ventilator, and they turned their attention to trying to pressure his mother into giving up and to go ahead and make their son an organ donor and not fight for continuing the treatments that they had on him, the food and the water, the ventilator. And so, you know, and with this brain injury, especially with young kids, as the experts will tell you, is there's an extremely high success rate mm-hmm. of recovering from brain injuries the younger that you are. And the amount of time that it took the physicians to go from trying to cure Clifton to trying to recruit him for an organ donor and to trying to pressure his mother into giving up was just amazing. And it was appalling at how quickly that worked. And, so Sandra, his mother, ended up feeling more like they were working against her rather than for her. And one of the ways that this came up was them. They were pressuring her to put a do not resuscitate order on the child, even though on Clifton, the 4-year-old, after she had already said she didn't want one. Just this standoff. It seemed like she was really fighting against the hospital, not with them, to save her son's life. And what ended up happening is they did use this 10-day process. They had the ethics committee, like we mentioned, where these employees of the hospital get together and talk to the family and tell the family the reasons they want to withdraw treatment, and then they vote. You know, they decide whether to withdraw the treatment or to continue the treatment. And they, like the vast majority of cases that we see, the hospital committee decided to withdraw treatment. And so, what happened, unfortunately, with Clifton is that his mother had to watch not only that 10-day countdown, but also after they forcibly removed his ventilator. His mother had to watch her 4-year-old son pass away because of this withdrawal of treatment against her will. And it was a horrific scene because, you know, your hospitals are here and we're not anti-hospital. We're not anti-doctor. We've seen miracles. We've seen physicians being able to really change lives and save lives. And that's why most of these doctors go into the field is to save lives. But unfortunately, what we saw in this case was just an amazing abuse of the law and an amazing abuse of the authority that these physicians had, and ended up forcing this young mother to watch her child pass away because of this passive euthanasia, like you mentioned, this withdrawing, this basic life-sustaining treatment. And Clifton, who was 4 years old at the time, did end up dying. And now his mother is a dedicated pro-life advocate. She came to the hearing to the Senate. She's told her story multiple times in different venues to try to educate people that this could happen to anybody. It happens to her own son. and it could happen to any Texan.
Yeah, and let's listen to that testimony that she just shared, folks. This is the mother of Clifton.
My name is Sandra Oye, and I'm here representing myself in favor of SB 2089 and SB 2129. And I want to share the story of my four-year-old son, Clifton. On July 20th, 2012, my son sustained a traumatic brain injury and was life-flighted to Children's Memorial Hermann in Houston. He was given a ventilator to help regulate his breathing, a feeding tube, five different blood pressure medications, and he had to undergo surgery to reduce the swelling on his brain. In order to continue treatment, doctors informed me that they would enforce a DNR without my consent, and I told them that I did not want to consent to a DNR, but they told me anyway that they weren't asking me, they were telling me this is what they were going to do. He began to have seizures and seemed unresponsive. Doctors repeatedly encouraged me to remove all life support, but then he began to move for the first time in a couple of weeks. The doctors explained this away as not purposeful movements from my son. The hospital called multiple ethics committee meetings to discuss if further brain surgeries were needed, as well as the removal of life support. Any questions or comments that I've made during those ethics committee meetings were shut down. I was told repeatedly that my input for his treatment was not up for discussion. Despite multiple ethics committee meetings, brain surgeries, and ventilator removal tests, they could not declare my son brain dead. He kept improving enough that they had encouraged me to donate his organs to others in need. But despite all of his progress, the ethics committee decided to remove my son from life support on the basis that even if he was to survive his injury, he would have a poor quality of life. I was told that I had 10 days to find another facility that would be willing to provide treatment for my son, that I could submit a list of potential transfer facilities to the social worker on duty, and that they would have someone call the hospital or someone call those hospitals. But there was no way for me to actually verify if any calls were being made. During those 10 days, I began to notice a decrease in my son's level of care. His feeding bag would go empty for hours until I demanded it be refilled, and he would also sit in soiled diapers until I had to beg a nurse to come in and change him. Finally, after 10 days of submitting countless lists to the hospital, on July 27, 2012, I watched the ventilator be removed from my son. The doctors told me that he would not expect to live more than 20 minutes, but for over an hour, I watched my son convulse and gasp for air until he died in my arms. He fought for his life for 5.5 weeks before the hospital made that fateful decision, again without my consent, to remove all life-sustaining treatment. So I ask of you to please support this bill to fight for life like that of my four-year-old son. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, imagine this being your four-year-old son or daughter or granddaughter or grandson in this regard. A heartbreaking story, and the pressure being placed that they would treat him if they had a DNR, do not resuscitate order. Well, Clifton died as a result of their pulling the ventilator and care for him. A very tragic story. And we could spend the whole program talking about this situation, but it really sets us up, John, for what's taking place, a very current situation going on. This time it's a woman, her name Carolyn Jones, 61-year-old African-American woman whose life is right now hanging in the balance over this 10-day rule. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a current case right now that you've mentioned is going on. And Carolyn Jones, her husband, Donald, actually came to the Senate again to plead with the committee to pass this bill that would stop this rule. But this is a couple from Beaumont. They're in a hospital in Houston. And Carolyn has a complex, medical condition situation. She's suffering from a stroke that she had last year. She's kind of been taking a couple of steps up in rehab and then ending it back up in an ER. And, like most of these patients have, and it's been a hard road, but her family has been there with her, and they've been committed to her recovering and to her to get in the right rehab to get back on track. Now, she ended up in a hospital in Houston needing a ventilator, being on dialysis, and a couple of other interventions to kind of give her some time to build up her strength to get back into rehab and to be released from the hospital. The hospital she ended up in Houston this time, though, did not want to give her that time. They started this 10-day process. They came to the ethics committee, and they said this is not going to stop. They just said she's going to keep ending up in this facility or that facility, And they're really trying to make that decision for the family, saying, we don't want you to keep looking for options. We don't want you to keep fighting, you know, and to try to get her to recover from this stroke. It's time to give up on her. And that was something that her husband, specifically her husband, Donald, was not ready to do.
So this hospital, they tried to invoke this. I believe it was March 8th of this year that they tried to invoke that 10-day rule.
Correct, and they did. They had the ethics committee meeting. They did kind of go through the ethics committee process where they gave the notice. They had the meeting, and they started the countdown. Now, thankfully, some of our lawyers got involved and negotiated with the hospital to stop the countdown and to say, you know, 10 days is not nearly enough. She is showing signs of recovery. You know, Carolyn was conscious. She was responding to verbal questions. Now, she has the tube, so again, she's not speaking, but she was shaking her head, yes, you know, very clear, yes, you know, answering questions, yes and no. So the lawyers were able to, you know, kind of work with the hospital to try to get them to negotiate, to get them to stop the countdown. But the issue is they were working on some insurance, and as you know, there's a lot of complicated issues whenever you have a patient in the hospital. There's a lot of administrative, whether it's to get a transfer, you have to have the right insurance lined up, you have to have them approved for this and that. That's what they were working on when the hospital decided to start the process over again, and that they said, no, we think this is taking too long, we're going to start the process again. And so right now, we have Carolyn, and our patient advocates are helping her, and the lawyers that we work with on these types of issues are working with them. But they started that 10-day countdown again, and right now the deadline for the process is Monday. And so if we are not able to transfer Carolyn, if her husband is not able to talk the hospital in to convince them to give her some more time to recover from this stroke, she's going to have that dialysis, she's going to have that ventilator forcibly withdrawn, even though she's conscious and able to respond.
And that's this coming Monday, May 13th.
May 13th, that's the way this law works, is it gives you 10 days. They're not business days. It even goes over the weekend. And so, you know, the family will still be frantically working over the weekend if we're not able to find that transfer. Is, you know, instead of spending time with Carolyn, you know, spending that time with their loved one, they are, you know, working around with lawyers. They're trying to get transfers. They're running around, you know, frantically doing anything they can to save their loved one's life. And that's just one of the cruelties of this law, is that we heard stories even in the hearing of patients who passed away while they were in the ethics committee. So the family's in the ethics committee arguing with these doctors about giving up on their loved one, and the patient actually passes away, and the family was not with the patient because they spent these last days of the patient's life being, you know, putting all the weight on them to, you figure this out, you go find a place that wants them, instead of being able to spend that important time with your loved one and let the physicians be the ones to fight for the patient's life.
Folks, we're going to take a break. I am going to be providing you a phone number today. There are steps you can take. John Sego is with us, Legislative Director for Texas Right to Life. So please be ready to jot down a telephone number that we provide, and also website information. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network. James 4:14 poses this thought. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Have you ever stopped to consider where you will spend eternity? You may say, but I'm a good person. I care for my family. I feed the poor. I stand up for life and traditional values. While all of these things are good, they fall far short of God's standard. Every one of us has a sin issue that must be dealt with. Our sin separates us from God, and each of us deserves to be eternally removed from God in everlasting punishment. But out of God's great love, he sent his Son, Jesus Christ, to bear our sins, shed his blood, die on the cross, and rise again. He is the only way of salvation, and it's imperative for you to place your trust in him. If you're wrestling with this issue, we'd like to send you a complimentary leaflet, Where Will You Spend Eternity? To receive a copy, just ask for it when you call us at 1-800-729-9829. 800-729-9829. This is Crosstalk on VCY America, a very critical issue going on in the state of Texas right now, where there's another life hanging in the balance due to the 10-day rule that's going on in Texas. And just before we pick this up, John, this is one active case that we know right now, but your organization at Texas Right to Life, your legislative director there, there have been hundreds of situations similar to the very matters we're talking about.
Yes, one of the parts of the law is that they don't collect data. So we actually don't know how many Texans have been victimized by this law. My organization, we only know the families that happen to call us, that happen to ask us for help. Some Google us, some have list of resources that's given to them at the hospital, and they find us, but there's no collective number. So we only know the families that happen to come to us that we can help out.
So Carolyn's husband, again, we're talking about Carolyn Jones, and ladies and gentlemen, she's 61 years old, an African-American woman whose life is hanging in the balance, literally. I mean, they have invoked the 10-day rule, meaning this coming Monday, May the 13th, they're going to withdraw her ventilator, they're going to withdraw her dialysis from taking place, which literally means, John, that she will die.
Yes, yeah, this is, I mean, a ventilator, it's not surgery. This is not, extraordinary care. This is not heroic measures. This is, you know, assisting her to breathe. And in her condition, a lot of these patients actually are weaned off the ventilator, you know, after the treatment, and you work, you help them breathe temporarily, and then you help them actually get to a place where they can breathe on their own. She's not going to be given that chance.
Her husband, Donald, he's objecting to this. Does a patient or a family have right of appeal on this process?
There's no appeal. You know, our Attorney General, the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, he actually got involved in a case a couple of years ago, saying this current law, this 10-day rule, is unconstitutional because it doesn't give the patient due process, substantial due process protections, and it's because there's no appeal. For one reason, there's no appeal. After that ethics committee in that hospital decides that we're going to take your treatment away, you only get 10 days notice. There's no way a judge can look and see if they made the right decision or not. You can only go to the judge and beg them to give you more time to transfer. Mm. But the legal bar is pretty high of what you can do in court. And so the Attorney General said there's no due process for patients in Texas under this law.
I was reading an article on lifenews.com regarding her, and they reported she tracks movement with her eyes, she responds to stimulus, she can move the right side of her body, she cries, she expresses frustration when uncomfortable. She is very active as far as a patient is concerned. She's not, you know, rendered, unconscious or incapacitated where she can't respond in these ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So the law does not clarify what types of patients you can use this law on. So you can have conscious patients, you'd have unconscious patients. There's no distinction of who could be victimized by this law. And so we've seen conscious patients who were even able to write out what they wanted. Yeah. If they wanted to continue the ventilator to be victimized by this law. And it's just one of the ways that this is a huge, huge abuse on the dignity of human life because it allows doctors to use their ethics in place of the decisions that the patient or the family is making,
or their lack of ethics. So I see this could even be for non-medical reasons, financial reasons, or their subjective quality of life judgment, or just plain outright discrimination.
Absolutely, there's no patient protections in this law because as long as you give the right notice, you go to the right committee, you do the 10-day countdown, you follow the process. Any of the bad ethics or things that you and I would not support, like you said, discriminating against specific patients, all of that is allowed under the current law.
So her life is hanging in the balance. What is it? What course of action can people take, both within Texas as well as those outside the state of Texas?
Well, since this is a state law, we have to repeal this 10-day rule. We do have to pass in Texas law. We have to take this section out that allows for the doctor to just give a 10-day notice and wait out the clock. We have to change that law. And so it does require the state legislature to pass a bill. And there is a bill that they're debating right now, Senate Bill 2089 by Senator Brian Hughes, Senate Bill 2089 by Brian Hughes. That's a pro-life bill that's in the legislature that's trying to fix this law. That sends a strong message to hospitals saying, when it comes to these basic life-sustaining treatment decisions, decisions about a ventilator, decisions about dialysis, about food and water, these decisions should only be up to the patient and the family in consultation with the doctor, in kind of working together with the doctor, not putting the doctor against the patient. And so that law 2089, that bill 2089 is still going through the process and had a great committee hearing. A lot of these personal stories we're talking about were highlighted there. But the Senate needs to pass this bill. And right now they do not have a vote scheduled. They could schedule it any day now to bring up that bill and pass 2089.
If they would bring forth that bill within the next day or two, could this life be spared even on the legislative basis?
This law would probably take longer than Monday to get across the finish line, to get to the governor's desk, but it would at least give the political pressure on the hospital of this is not something the state condones, that the state of Texas does want to fix this and does not want hospitals to substitute their ethics for a decision that the family has already made.
Right now, your organization, Texas Right to Life, is advocating the making of phone calls to the lieutenant governor's office. Why do you believe this is crucial action?
So there's a lot of politics currently around this law. There's a lot of stakeholders and interest groups that are fighting against this law, believe it or not. The Medical Association here in Texas, the Hospital Association, they are saying this is the right of the hospital. This is the right of the physician to make this decision, even when the patient's family is there begging for the treatment to continue, even when the patient is there with an advance directive saying to continue. So you have the Medical Association lobbying against this pro-life law. And it's difficult. It's a difficult situation that we have in the Capitol where these senators need to be encouraged, that they need to be bold and stand for life. And now when we think of pro-life issues, we think about pregnant women and preborn children, but our same convictions, the value of that individual human being, must be applied here, must be applied to protecting vulnerable patients. And we need Texans to call their senator. You can go to TexasRightToLife.com/10, 10, TexasRightToLife.com/10, to come up with a form where you can put in your address, see who your state senator is, and send them a message saying, please pass this pro-life law. If you're out of the state and you want to help out, we need to encourage our lieutenant governor. He's a pro-life hero. He's passed pro-life legislation in the past, but he needs some encouragement because there are a bunch of organizations, a bunch of lobbyists working in the Capitol as we speak to kill this pro-life bill.
Okay, and you've got the phone number for the Texas lieutenant governor. His name is Dan Patrick.
Yeah, so Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is a pro-life hero, and he needs to be encouraged to lead on this issue of protecting vulnerable patients. His number is 512-463-0001. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, 512-463-0001.
And when people call from around the country, what would they be telling him?
Be telling Lieutenant Governor Patrick, please take a stand for life and pass Senate Bill 2089 to protect vulnerable patients like Carolyn Jones.
Again, folks, the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, phone number 512-463-0001. Calls from around the country going to his office throughout the day today, throughout the day tomorrow, and the day after this. Right now, this life hanging in the balance, even for this coming Monday. Dan Patrick's office, 512-463-0001. And within Texas, you've got an active mechanism as well through your website, TexasRightToLife.com/10. That's numeric 10, 10. TexasRightToLife.com/10. And that deals with this 10-day rule. This is what you're finding the best course of action at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. This is what we need to do. And with that, it gives our lawyers the ability to negotiate with the hospital and say, you know, you're going to have a lot of political pressure on your back for going against what the state of Texas is headed in. And unfortunately, it's taken this long to get any progress on this bill, but this is a critical bill Our lawyers are working and looking at all options of how to help Carolyn immediately. But, you know, Carolyn is just one of the hundreds of victims of this law, and we are trying to save her, you know, in the immediate, but we have to think of what's going to happen next month. Who is going to be the face, you know, next month? Who's going to be the victim and the family that actually maybe even, you know, suffering this this law that we never hear about? You know, these stories rarely get into the news. They rarely get publicity. And we, you know, Texas is a pro-life state. We should be, out of any state, we should be leading the way in protecting vulnerable patients, not victimizing them with this anti-life 10-day rule.
Friends, we're going to open our phone lines. If you have a question you'd like to ask, a comment, a brief, we've got a little bit limited time. Our number here is 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. Our guest today, John Siegel, Legislative Director for Texas Right to Life. You can get much more detail and watch videos and see information on this very topic through their website, TexasRightToLife.com/10. That's the number 10. And I think this is something that's very interesting because Carolyn Jones's husband, Donald, one statement he made, and I don't have time to play his testimony, but he said, he talked about those on death row have greater rights than what his wife does, who is hooked up to dialysis and a ventilator.
Yeah, and that's the argument from the substantial due process is, yeah, absolutely. If this ethics committee decides to take away your ventilator, there's no appeal process that you can go through, unlike on death row. And that case was made by multiple witnesses in the hearing, is just how backwards this law is. And it's definitely not protecting innocent human life like you and I believe in a pro-life state like Texas should.
Friends, our telephone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. We'd like to get your reaction to this, but certainly calls to the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, whose number is 512-463-0001. Let's go to Lori, who's calling in from Michigan. Lori, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question. Is there any way we can try to get a hold of a hospital or anything like that where we can actually try to intervene for Carolyn, and at this late hour, or is there any other possibilities of reaching out to Dan, to the Lieutenant Governor, so that to encourage him to actually try to save her life?
John,
couple questions.
So when this under this case, we're talking to the senator. Thankfully, Carolyn's senator is a pro-life champion. He filed legislation on this topic, and he was working on it. He is, you know, trying to put pressure on the hospital, trying to negotiate with them, come up with some solution. The difficulty is this is legal. This is allowed by law. And so it's only political pressure on the hospital. So you're definitely free to, you can find the name of the hospital on our website. You can definitely put pressure on the hospital. We have found that's not the most effective thing. We get the elected officials to put the pressure there. But changing this law is kind of our top priority right now.
Thank you for the call. We are up against a break. We're back in 60 seconds. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. John Siegel, our guest today, Legislative Director for Texas Right to Life. We're talking about the death sentence, the 10-day rule it's known as in Texas.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Well, we just finished up our national conference at Lake of the Ozarks, and the theme was Holocaust Horizon. This is a serious topic and one that we as Christians must address. Why? Because there's a watching world looking to see if we're willing to put our actions where our faith claims to be. One story would be that of Albert Einstein. Everyone knows who Albert Einstein is. He was a Jewish man, and he left Germany. But before he left Germany, he noticed that the editorial papers had gone silent on what was happening to the Jews. The professors at the universities had gone silent. Those he thought would speak up about liberty and freedom had gone silent. And then he said a group of people which he had very little respect for stood up and stood squarely in the path of Adolf Hitler. It was a small group of Christians, and he declared that group which he had very little respect for, he now praises unreservedly. There are unbelievers watching how we respond to the anti-Semitism that is growing. May we do as we're called and defend the people of God.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Our call-in number today, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. We're talking about the 10-day rule in Texas as lives hang in the balance. John Segoe is our guest, Legislative Director for Texas Right to Life. And what's amazing, though, there is, as we mentioned, this the life story right now of Carolyn Jones, who's sentenced basically to die on Monday by lifting, removing the ventilator, by removing her dialysis from her. This has happened hundreds of times. And John is saying, you know, enough is enough. We need to have the laws changed here in the state of Texas. And frankly, right now, Senate Bill 2089 is one that will do just that. We will see you to contact the lieutenant governor there, 512-463-0001. You can also, those of you listening in Texas, can go to the Texas website and locate your individual legislator, capital.texas.gov, capital with an O-L, capital.texas.gov. You can go to Texas Right to Life's website, texasrighttolife.com/10. Let's go to Florida next, and Courtney is calling. Courtney, you're on the air.
God bless all you saints. I got a new cell phone. I lost my other one last month. But I want to say something to all you saints, and very serious. All you saints, call in. Call in and let them know that you want to say that this bill changed so lives can be saved. Because all that is the work of the devil. That's all that is Satan's work. But God bless all y'all. Tell your mothers that you love them on Mother's Day, even if y'all that haven't spoke for years or months or whatever. And God bless you. And call in. And what's that Senate bill number again?
That's, go ahead.
Yeah, Senate Bill 2089. Senate Bill 2089.
Thank you. God bless you now.
Thank you for the call, Courtney. Bob is calling in, West Dallas, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Bob.
Yes, I went with a group from the Missionaries of Preborn. I think it was down to Indiana several years ago, and the same thing was going on. And we went down there, and I think we stayed 2 days or three on the steps outside with a group of people, and things got changed down there. And I think I'm just calling in to say, I think people need to not just say, oh, that's terrible, that's horrible, they shouldn't do it. They need to get out of their houses and go down there and make their presence seen by the officials in charge of doing that, whoever they are.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate that. John, is this kind of like a Terry Schiavo situation all over again?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. So Terry Schiavo's brother, Bobby Schindler, he's actually now an activist for vulnerable patients. He started a nonprofit after Terry was starved to death in Florida. Her brother started a nonprofit to be a patient advocate, to help families who are in these disagreements with hospitals, and he's actually in favor of this bill. He came down and from out of state to testify in the Senate, supports this bill, is advocating for it, has written a couple of articles. Now, Terry Schiavo was food and water. In the case with Carolyn and these other stories we've heard, the major treatment they're debating is ventilator, but it's still life-sustaining treatment, basic care. It's not curative. It's not therapy. It's not surgeries or interventions. It's food, water, air, dialysis. It's very basic life-sustaining treatment, and that's what we're debating. You know, we're not talking about, you know, us forcing doctors to do, you know, these extraordinary measures or do surgeries when they think it's a bad idea. We're talking about keeping a patient alive, just very simple treatment.
In Carolyn's situation, is there any evidence that treatment is not working or that she is just totally beyond hope?
No, absolutely not. She's a stroke victim. She's been in and out of hospitals. She's been weaned off the ventilator. She had to go back on the ventilator. I mean, she's making progress. It's up and down, you know, like most of these cases are. But yeah, there's no evidence that it's futile. Sometimes that term is used a lot about this care is futile. And, you know, there's no limitation on this law that says you can only withdraw care that is not, treatment that is not doing its job anymore. That's futile. Now, the word futile is being stretched a lot in these debates to mean we don't think it's worth it. And that gets us back to this idea of quality of life ethics. We hear doctors say, oh, well, the ventilator is futile, meaning she'll only live a couple of more days, you know, and so we might as well end her life today. Well, that's not, you know, a medical opinion. That's an ethical opinion of how, you know, whether this life is worth living. That's the kind of decision that needs to be left to the family, to the patient. So that term futile, we've seen, you know, mean more than just whether it's effective treatment or not. These treatment is currently effective. It's helping her breathe. The dialysis is helping her. It's making her, it is actually doing its intended, having its intended consequence, but they're still moving forward to withdraw it.
So in this case, and they're seeking right now to have her transferred to another hospital, and ultimately she could be transferred to another hospital, but she'd still be in Texas, and that whole 10-day rule could start all over again.
Yes, and what, you know, when we have these patients, sometimes there are patients who are in the dying process, who they don't, you know, they don't need to be in an ICU. They do need to go to a long-term care facility. They do need to go to a nursing home with a ventilator or even home health care. I mean, sometimes, yes, they need to be sent to a different care environment, you know, a different facility. But we never just give up on these patients and say, we're going to withdraw the ventilator. You know, we need to support these families and make sure that they are in an appropriate care setting, and that we're actually, the hospital is working with the family, to care for the patient, even in the dying process, rather than giving up on them because their life is not worthy.
Wow. Our guest today here, John Segoe, Legislative Director for Texas Right to Life, and I would here, as we close out the program, give you the contact information once again, and first of all, to the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Texas, Dan Patrick. What needs to happen, folks, is law is needing change, because this is one case, but there are hundreds of cases, at least that Texas Right to Life knows about. Lieutenant Governor's number is 512. This is the Dan Patrick's office, 512-463-0001. You can also go to the website texasrighttolife.com/10, that's the number 10, and obtain a lot of information about this law and about the situation pending at this point. John, thank you for being on the front lines on the issue here on this 10-day rule and for bringing it to the attention of our listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you for highlighting this issue and for having us on.
John Segoe with us, Legislative Director from Texas Right to Life. Check out their site and get the information, but certainly a call to the Lieutenant Governor's office. If you find it busy, wait just a time. Call back at 512-463-0001.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.